except for the Marabar Caves, and they are 20 miles off. The city of Chandrapur presents nothing extraordinary. Edged rather than washed by the river Ganges, it trails for a couple of miles along the bank, scarcely distinguishable from the rubbish it deposits freely. Inland, the prospect alters. There's an oval maidan and a long, sallow hospital. Houses belonging to the Eurasians stand on the high ground by the railway station. Beyond the railway, which runs parallel to the river, the land sinks and then rises again steeply. On this second rise is laid out the little civil station, and viewed hence, Chandrapur appears to be a totally different place. It is a city of gardens. The toddy palms and neem trees and mangoes and people that were hidden by the bazaars now become visible and in their turn hide the bazaars. The civil station provokes no emotion. It charms not, neither does it repel. It is sensibly planned, with a red brick club on its brow and further back a grocer's and a cemetery. And the bungalows are disposed along roads that intersect at right angles. The sky settles everything, not only climates and seasons, but when the earth shall be beautiful. By herself she can do little, only feeble outbursts of flowers. But when the sky chooses, glory can rain into the Chandrapur bazaars, or a benediction pass from horizon to horizon. The sky can do this because it is so strong and so enormous. No mountains infringe on the curve. Only in the south, where a group of fists and fingers are thrust up through the soil, is the endless expanse interrupted. These fists and fingers are the Marabar Hills, containing the extraordinary caves. The young Dr. Aziz is rattling along the road on his bicycle with speed. He is hungry.
Oh, out of my way, children. Don't dawdle in the street. Careful, no brakes on this bicycle.
Hamidullah! Hamidullah!
Am I late?
Aziz, do not apologize. You are always late.
Kindly answer the question. Am I late? Has Mahmood Ali eaten all the food? If so, I'll go elsewhere.
Oh, Mr. Mahmood Ali, how are you?
I am very well, Dr. Aziz.
Aziz, sit down. Don't chatter. We are having a very serious talk.
Oh, may I? Why are you both looking so serious?
We are discussing as to whether or not it is possible to be friends with an Englishman.
And what are your conclusions on the subject?
In my humble opinion, it is not possible.
I see.
I disagree. At least I only contend that it is possible in England. I received a very cordial welcome at Cambridge.
That was a long time ago.
Nevertheless,
it is not possible here, Aziz. The red-nosed boy, Heslop, has insulted me in court again. Oh. Until recently, he was quite a nice boy, but the others have got hold of him.
They have no chance here, that is my point. They come out intending to be gentlemen and are told it will not do. Look at Leslie and Blackiston. Mm. Now it's your red-nosed boy, and Fielding will go next. I remember when Turton first came out here. It was in another part of the province. You fellows will not believe me, but I have driven with Turton in his carriage.
Turton's own carriage, really?
Oh, yes. We were once quite close. He has shown me his stamp collection.
He would expect you to steal it now. But I think the red-nosed boy would be far worse than Turton.
They all become exactly the same. I give any Englishman 2 years, be he Turton or Burton. And I give any Englishwoman 6 months. All are exactly alike.
I do not agree. For my own part, I find profound differences among our rulers. Red Nose mumbles. Mm. Turton talks distinctly. Mrs. Turton takes bribes.
Bribes?
Surely you've heard about the incident when the Turtons were British officials presiding over a canal scheme? Somewhere in central India.
No. What incident?
Some Raja or other gave Mrs. Turton a sewing machine in solid gold. So that the water would run through his estate.
And does it?
No. That's why Mrs. Turton is so skillful. See, when we poor blacks take bribes, we perform what we are bribed to perform, and the law discovers us in consequence. The English take, and do nothing. I admire them.
We all admire them. Aziz, please pass me the hookah.
A little while longer. I've just got it going.
But you are a very selfish boy. God, where is our dinner? Serve it now. Take my case. Young Hugh Bannister. Here is the son of my dear, my dead friends, the Reverend and Mrs. Bannister, whose goodness to me in England I shall never forget. In the vacations, their rectory became my home. They entrusted their children to me. I often carried little Hugh about. I took him up to the funeral of Queen Victoria and held him in my arms above the crowd.
Queen Victoria was different.
I now hear that this boy is in business as a leather merchant in Kanpur. Imagine how I long to see him. But it is useless. The other Anglo-Indians will have got to him long ago. He will probably think I want something, and I cannot face that from the son of my old friends.
Can we stop talking about the English? Please? Who cares whether we're friends with them or not? Let's shut them out of our minds and be happy in each other's company.
Ah, come, my friends, let's eat.
Excuse me, sir.
What is it?
A message for the doctor.
Old Callender wants to see me at his bungalow. Mm. You'd think he had the politeness to say why.
Some case.
Maybe, maybe not. He knows it's my dinner hour and chooses to interrupt me every time to show his power.
It might be a serious case.
Eat your dinner quickly and then go.
The civil surgeon, Major Callender, was out by the time Dr. Aziz arrived at his bungalow. His servant informed the young doctor that he had waited, left no message, and had departed for the club. Infuriated at this snub, Aziz began to walk back home. He was an athletic little man, daintily put together, but really very strong. Nevertheless, walking fatigued him, as it fatigues everyone in India, except for the newcomer. At the edge of the civil station, he turned into a mosque to rest. He'd always liked this mosque. It was gracious. Where he sat, he looked into three arcades, whose darkness was illuminated by a small hanging lamp and by the moon. The front, in full moonlight, had the appearance of marble.
One day, I too will build a mosque. Smaller than this, but in perfect taste. So that all who pass by will experience the perfect happiness I feel now. And near it, under a low dome, will be my tomb with a Persian inscription. Alas, without me for thousands of years, the rose will blossom and the spring will bloom. But those who have secretly understood my heart, they will approach and visit the grave where I lie.
He had seen the quatrain on the tomb of a Deccan king and regarded it as a profound philosophy. The secret understanding of the heart. He repeated the phrase with tears in his eyes.
The secret understanding of the heart.
And as he did so, one of the pillars of the mosque seemed to quiver. Another pillar moved, a third. And then I stepped out into the moonlight.
Madam! Madam! Madam, this is a mosque. You have no right to be here at all. You should have taken off your shoes. This is a holy place for Muslims.
I've taken them off.
You have?
I left them at the entrance.
Then I ask your pardon. I am sorry if I startled you.
Yes, I was right, was I not? If I remove my shoes, I am allowed.
Of course, but so few ladies take the trouble, especially if they think there is no one here to see.
That makes no difference. God is here.
Madam.
Please, let me go.
Can I do you some service?
No, no, thank you. Good night.
May I know your name?
Mrs. Moore.
I was now in the shadow of the gateway, and advancing, he found that I was old, with a red face and white hair. My voice had deceived him.
Mrs. Moore, I am afraid I startled you. I shall tell my friends about you. God is here. Very good, very fine indeed. I think you are newly arrived in India?
Yes. How did you know?
By the way you address me.
May I call you a carriage?
I've only come from the club. They're doing a play that I've seen in London, and it was so hot.
I think you ought not to walk at night alone, Mrs. Moore. There are bad characters about, and leopards may come across from the Malabar Hills. Snakes also.
Snakes? Goodness me.
And a six-spot beetle. You pick it up, it bites, you die.
But you walk alone yourself.
Oh, I am used to it.
Used to snakes?
I'm a doctor. Snakes don't dare bite me. Mrs. Moore, may I ask you, why do you come to India at this time of year, just as the cold weather is ending?
To visit my son. He's the city magistrate here.
Our city's magistrate is Mr. Heslop.
He is my son, all the same. I was married twice.
Your first husband died?
And sadly, so did my second husband.
Then is the city magistrate the entire of your family now?
No, there are younger ones, Ralph and Stella, in England.
And the gentleman here, is he Ralph and Stella's half-brother?
Quite right.
Mrs. Moore, this is quite strange, because, like yourself, I have also lost my wife.
I am sorry. She must have been very young.
She was. But happily, I have two sons and a daughter.
What are your children's names? Not also Ronnie, Ralph and Stella, surely.
No, indeed. The first is called Ahmed, the second Kareem, and the third, she is the eldest, Jamila. Three children are enough.
I agree.
Would you care to see over the Minto Hospital one morning?
Thank you, I've already seen it. Though it's a shame I could not see it with you.
I suppose the civil surgeon took you.
Yes, and Mrs. Callender.
Ah, a very charming lady.
Possibly, when one knows her better.
You don't like her?
She was certainly intending to be kind, but I did not find her exactly charming.
Major Callender's behaviour to me is not charming. He interrupts me every day from where I am dining with my friends, and I go at once, breaking up my entertainment, and he is not there. Not even a message. Is this charming? But what does it matter? I can do nothing and he knows it. I'm just a subordinate. My time is of no value. You understand me, Mrs. Moore. You know what I feel. If only all the others resembled you.
I don't think I understand people very well. I only know if I like or dislike them.
Then you are an Oriental. May I escort you back to the club?
Thank you, yes. Perhaps you would care to join me.
I am not a member, but I can walk you to the gates.
Surely, as my guest.
Indians are not allowed into the Chandrapur Club, even as guests.
Aziz said this simply. He did not expatiate on his wrongs now, being happy. On his way back from the club, as he strolled downhill beneath the lovely moon and saw again the beautiful mosque, he seemed to own the land as much as anyone owned it. What did it matter if a few flabby Hindus had preceded him there, and a few chilly English succeeded?